This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 1, Overall Process Support and Outreach Issue, held on the 28th of March, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room only. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Sarah Bakke. Please begin.
Thank you. This is Sarah Bakke. Thank you all for joining us today. So today on our agenda, we're going to, of course, we'll do a call for SOIs. We're also just going to do a recap and discussion regarding some of the topics that we discussed during ICANN 58. You'll recall, if you were there, that we saw people vote on what they would like to discuss, and the two main items were the RSP program and clarity of application process. But we also did have some good feedback regarding costing that Jonathan provided us. So we thought it would just be good to sort of circle back and go over some of the good points that were raised, or maybe new ideas, so we could sort of flesh them out as we and move forward. So, as I said, we're going to let's see. So that's the agenda overview. So SOIs. Does anyone have any updates to their SOIs? Okay, seeing no hands. And let's see, next slide. Oh, I have control now, don't I? Okay. So there's our agenda. we'll also discuss our next meeting. And actually, during our next meeting, we will likely start, the intent is to sort of have a deeper discussion regarding the RPS program, potential policy issues that could be there. So that gives you an idea of what is coming up, and that will be on April 11th. And so anyone has any questions? If anyone would like to add something to this agenda before we start discussing, if you could let us know now. Okay, not seeing any hands or any conversations in the chat. So we will go to our next slide, and I will turn this over to Krista to discuss.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the items that was brought up was holistic costing approach to multiple rounds of applications. And one of the key themes that is, was brought up was the multiple phases of a single program or multiple rounds. And if the question was, when cost recovery was discussed in the past, did anyone consider cost recovery across the different rounds? And in other words, some of the thinking seems to be that cost recovery would, in the next round, be in isolation. And then furthermore, there is some concern from existing applicants that there are, in effect, supporting future rounds. And one of the questions was if the person was just wondering if anyone's looking at it holistically, or is it focused solely based on the cost of new rounds in isolation? So kind of repeating the first thought. And then finally, thinking about cost holistically as opposed to discrete rounds, or maybe a first-come, first-served type of process as well. So we're looking for some feedback on that from everyone. My own perspective, especially from an accounting background, is that we have already brought up some of the concerns regarding the surplus that's already there and the difference between cost recovery and the application fees. So this potentially could increase that gap further. And then also, we don't know the number of quote-unquote rounds if we're going to do that. And it would also need a whole bunch of other information to make it actually work. So, for instance, volumes or perhaps the different types of applications and the cost. And I'm sure the CFO of ICANN would just love the accounting nightmare of trying to predict everything for X amount of rounds. But any feedback or any other insights or thoughts or discussion on it would be wonderful. And, Alan, I see you have your hand up, so please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give you a recollection, and perhaps Jeff or someone else who was around going all the way back to the start of the process can confirm or tell me I'm hallucinating. My recollection is the original intent was that the round, the first round, be cost recovery. And the price of $185,000 was set based on the estimates that were available at the time for the cost of the actual evaluation and running the program and to repay the development costs. After that price was set, and there was a clear decision not to change that price, the development took a lot longer than we had planned. Due to issues related to the GAC and all sorts of other things, we added a few years onto the program, and the development costs went up radically at that point, or at least certainly significantly. And my recollection is the way that was going to be addressed was that the development costs would be spread over into the future rounds. This is before we had surpluses out of the current price, the current one, because of the volume of applicants. But at that point, it was presumed we would not have enough money in the 185,000 times N applicants to repay all of the development costs plus the operational costs, and we would spread the development costs into future rounds. That's, if my recollection is correct, that sends a clear message that nothing is sacred, that it has to be done within each round and they cannot be cost-shared in any direction once that decision was made. Thank you.
Hi. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. Alan's right in that that was how we initially talked about it, was that one component, there were three components to the cost. One was to recover the historical costs, which is what Alan was referring to, as well as to recover the development costs for that first round. The second element was to cover for the costs of the evaluations. And the third element was kind of this contingency fund for litigation or unexpected expenses. What I think is clear is that because of the surplus and because we've now already baked in historical costs and we've baked in ongoing operations going forward, and plus ICANN staff has indicated that it would not be any kind of increased ramp up to begin any new rounds. So it doesn't seem to me that that first element of recovering historical costs or development costs needs to be built into a cost recovery model going forward. And then we could discuss the element of the litigation or contingency fund as to what we actually think about that on a going forward basis, whether third of the cost is too much or you know, exactly what that should be. But I think then what that leaves us with is really just the notion of trying to set in policy, if we want to do a cost recovery or even a cost recovery plus type model, we need to build in what those costs should and should not be. From my personal opinion, again, with ICANN's increasing budget, with the increasing fees that they're getting, and under the assumption that it would not have to be such a huge ramp up to start additional rounds or application windows, at least according to Akram's latest statement, I don't think that that bird should be built in. As Fang's got a comment saying one big development cost for the next round is the system development cost. And that may be, Trang, but that I can't imagine that there should be some reusable elements of the current system. But that's probably a really good question, Trang, for you all to get back to us as to what your additional expected costs would be going forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Alan, I see your hand up. Is that an old hand?
Yeah, thank you. Just to be clear, I only went into that long parable of what happened last time to establish that at least at that point, we didn't believe that each round had to be isolated from each other. And therefore, if that rule still applies, which it may or may not, we do have the flexibility of going forward deciding that each round should be isolated or not. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen. Just for a quick reference, in that first round, the development costs were approximately $27,000 per application, with fixed application processing fees around $25,000, variable of $73,000, and risk costs about $60,000. That was baked into the $185,000. So I guess more of the question goes around, should it be in isolation or not? And any other questions relating to that? A few little comments that I'm kind of behind in the Adobe chat is Alexander Schubert says, why cost recovery in the first place? What if the cost goes down to 5K? We face hundreds of thousands of GPLDs. And we kind of discussed that, I think, several times on the concern on making it a commodity, and therefore we thought that there should be some kind of flooring around that so it doesn't become that. And it seemed to be that there's more of a consensus on leaning towards that, but feel free to tell me if I'm wrong. And, again, there must be a substantial hurdle to overcome for applying for a new GPLD. The easiest hurdle is a monetary one. If there is no entry barrier, we would be flooded with applications by hobby GPLD makers. The comment on Trang was already recorded. And Steve Chan, I would imagine the development cost would be dependent upon the recommendations from this group. Trang Kaz has been retired, so we need a new system development now. Not much work depends on how many changes from the 2012 round there will be. Donna, Alex, we did have some discussion about the challenges associated with setting a low application fee. Thanks, Donna. And Jeff, some of the development cost was not wisely spent, especially in trying to develop a homegrown, customized, one-time solution. I think I caught up there. Steve Chan, there was a question regarding pricing for ANPC2. So I guess the question arises of, do we want it to be separated? Oh, sorry, Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. The way I took Alexander's comments were more that he was concerned that cost recovery was serving as a pricing ceiling than a pricing floor, and that the concept that cost recovery should be used as opposed to some form of, say, cost plus or some other type of decision-making process that might result in higher prices, whatever the cost is. And, you know, I think that we have been talking about setting a floor price since to some extent a commodity is worth what you pay for it, and there should be some value attached to this investment that makes sense. And the other thing I think that's unclear to me economically is whether if we're talking about kind of cross-collateralizing rounds, whether the effect of that is that it would lower the prices in the second round, assuming we're having rounds, or would it raise the prices? I've been running under the assumption that there was, in essence, a net profit, if you will, from the first round, since particularly legal costs were not what they were expected to be. So in that case, you know, this, one could say that if cost recovery was the concept, that the second round should be subsidized by what may be the mythical costs of the first round. And not to get any deeper into accounting, but consider the fact that ICANN dug deep into its reserves to an unhealthy extent to fund the transition. Looking at these things in silos, it's one thing to take the auction proceeds as a siloed amount of money, but it's quite another thing to take the costs of a major overall revenue-producing event like the first round and consider it only as a consider it in isolation. You know, clearly, to my mind, ICANN has to look at it getting its reserves back up to the point where there's a healthy reserve according to best practices for organizations like this. So to some extent, talking about all this in the abstract without having any idea what the actual accounting is or what the effect is, positive or negative, it is a little rough, but I do agree, in a sense, with Alexander, that mere cost recovery, in other words, trying to run a zero balance sheet in it on any particular round and ignoring any other of the many costs or potential costs of ICANN, you know, is narrow-minded and I think, you know, needs to be looked at in a much bigger picture by people who are much more numbers-oriented than me. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Jeff, I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. What I would really like to see us do, because it seems like we're kind of all over the place, is if we could take a few minutes now to just engage in an exercise of, you know, the existing policy right now, today, if we did nothing, is cost recovery. That's what the CNS decided in 2008, and that was approved by the board. If we think that there should be a change to that policy, which some are on the list, like Alexander and others have made an argument that there should be a floor, I would love for us to just spend like the next 10, 15, 20 minutes putting down all the reasons why we should have a change of policy to have a floor. And again, I'm not passing judgment which way is right or wrong, but we should probably list all the reasons specifically why we should change the policy to have a floor. Now, Greg added an aspect of, you know, potentially we should look at funding for reserve funds or additional ICANN activities, include that in the GTLD. That might be one thing. I know we've said this is a piece of internet real estate, but that still doesn't say why. What are we afraid of happening if the price is too low? And so I think that would be kind of an effective exercise for those that think that there should be a change in the policy. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Maybe we can capture some more ideas here. Would any, either in the chat or if anyone like to put up their hand. In the chat, I see Alex has added, there's also a cost to society, brands, the intellectual property community. Sorry. If 100,000 GTLDs are being applied for because they cost only 10,000 each, then the cost to the wider community is big. Donna says, at Greg, agree with getting the reserves back up, but I can't be using excess funds from future rounds to do that. I know that's not what you are suggesting, but I just wanted to put that out for the record. Greg, Donna, I wouldn't consider those to be excess fees. It's simply revenue, and I don't see why revenue should not be used to bolster reserves. Greg, on that point, since the first fees are so significant, a floor was irrelevant. Sorry, I think, Greg, when you were talking, there's, I think, is around $90 million in excess funds, just to give you a little bit of insight on what's there. Jeff, is that an old hand or a new hand?
It's a new one. And it's really to just kind of push Alexander and some others a little bit harder. So why is that a problem? Why is the cost to the wider community big? I think we should spell it out. If we believe that, you know, what if the price is, I'll be real extreme, what if the price is $100? You know, like, what are we afraid of actually happening so we can document that and put that in writing? Because right now we just have a lot of conclusory statements like the cost to society will be big, this is a piece of internet real estate and should be valued higher. We have these large general statements, but nothing pinpoint. You know, if we could just say, look, what are we really afraid of actually happening, then it may help us evaluate what solution we want. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Alex, I see you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Alexander. Two issues that I can come up with. I have been a domainer since 20 years, and I know a lot of domainers. If the costs and Jeff, you said down to $100. If it is, let's say it goes down to $10,000, every single hobby domainer out there will dream of their own GTLD. They have no clue what it means to run one. So they will apply for it. They start to run it. They understand, oh, it's actually not that simple. They will struggle. They will give it up. Or they might even apply for one thinking, okay, if it runs by itself, fine. If it doesn't run, I simply give it up. So you will see a lot of properties that are in some stages of being built up but then abandoned because it became too much work. Because it's not done by professionals like in the first round. The other item I have is what I said about the brands and intellectual property community. In the first round, it was kind of an overseeable amount of generic terms that the intellectual property community had to cover. So a lot of brands felt compelled to register their brand in the new TLDs. And there were a few TLDs like .tux, .wtf, and so on and so forth that that create a problem for brands. So if we are going into the direction of 100,000 TLDs, if I were in the intellectual property constituency, I would go haywire because this can create a big, big problem very fast. I'm finished.
Thanks, Alexander. I think your point on failure is a great one and helps to the discussion. Greg, I see you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. I think we should be asking this question in both directions, not just one. In other words, we should also be asking why a floor would be a bad idea. In other words, the status quo should also be defended, as well as defending the idea of changing the status quo. Otherwise, this is a kind of a one-sided discussion. You know, has the presumption that the status quo makes sense. As I was saying earlier, at $185,000 per, there was no reason to consider a policy of having a floor. So, in essence, it's not that this is so much a change in policy as it is an addition of a policy. If we had a no-floor concept and the idea was to drive this down as far as possible in cost ultimately to zero, then that would be a change in policy to add a floor. So I think it kind of prejudices the conversation a bit. I don't mean that pejoratively, just in the sense of, looking at this holistically, so to speak. We need to look at why it would make sense to allow for just, you know, pure cost recovery and not, in essence, price this based on value or concerns. You know, if you look at the first 15 years of ICANN, new GTLDs were dribbled out in extremely small and rare amounts, maybe in the sense that this was looked at like spectrum, which at least was viewed as scarce. To some extent, you know, GTLDs can be viewed as scarce, too. Just look at all the good ones are taken, concerns about .com at the second level. So in a sense, if we give this stuff away for pennies, at some point, it's either disruptive and completely changes the idea of a TLD as being a significant business, and then it becomes just like a second-level domain. That's a huge conceptual shift that would need to be defended. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Great point.
Alan, if you have your hand up.
Thank you. I find Alexander's comments moderately compelling, but I think we also have to discuss, and I'm not quite sure it's our mandate, but someone needs to discuss that if we do set a price above what it will actually cost ICANN in out-of-pocket costs to run a next round or an ongoing process, what do we do with that surplus? It's an interesting question. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff, go ahead.
Thanks. So just to look back at the past, right, in the very first round, the cost to apply was $50,000. That was in 2000. Then in 2004, 2005, when they opened up the next round, that cost was $50,000, but then there was a refund issued after the costs were determined. So that's pretty much an unheard of concept these days, but there actually was a refund. And then I don't think we noticed too many abusive applications at that point in time, or certainly not the horror show that we're afraid of going forward. And then, of course, in this last round, it was $185,000, and we had 1,900-plus applications. So I'm not sure necessarily that dropping the price would mean such a large increase in number of applications that are submitted. And I'm not necessarily sure that an increase in price would lower the amount of applications we receive as well. So I'm not sure how much price elasticity or inelasticity there is with respect to setting that price. But I do think right now it's a good exercise for us to engage in as far as the pros and cons of the one side having the price be pure cost recovery and potentially too low. And we've come up with a couple, or Alexander has put forth a couple reasons what his concerns are if the price was too low. And, of course, we then need to go on the opposite side of, well, what if the price is too high, like we artificially set it at $500,000? And I think we should specify the risks of doing that, which I think I heard Greg talk a little bit to, which is the competition effect or anti-competition it might be if the price all of a sudden goes up a great extent, and that kind of, you know, insulates the existing TLDs from additional competition. And then, you know, what is the, ramifications, pros and cons of sticking at the same level? I think that's the exercise we should be engaging in right now and endeavor to put a chart together on that so that we can then make that informed decision.
Thanks, Jeff. I know there's a bunch of comments in the chat that I've probably missed. I see Samantha's added that there's a comment of it acts as a gating mechanism where only businesses of certain sizes can apply. And she goes on further, being able to put a high application cost implies that these organizations are more financially stable. if they were to replace, the evaluators would have to look more closely at financials and business plans included in the applications. Michael Fleming, I agree with keeping the cost higher. Cost recovery is the right idea as long as the cost comes back. Not sure what cost comes back means, but my firm and I feel that our customers, the value of a GTLD can be seen on its price. Brands in the first round paid a high price for a resource, and that becomes minimized if the price of the resource goes down too much for future application windows. And also, we may need to also consider that we did discuss different application fees for the different types of applications, which could impact this discussion. Jeff sums up Alexander's comments. If we're too low, we have unsophisticated buyers of TLDs. And as we mentioned, it's a threat to security and stability. If it's too low, we have squatting activities and abuse. Donna, Greg, there would be excess fees as the cost recovery model was not applied. Well, my point was more that I don't believe it was appropriate to raise funds to bolster the reserve fund by opening up another round of TLDs. And Michael, could we just see a list of hands to see who is for cost recovery model and who is against? So does any, I'll just keep going a little bit further, so I don't want to read this out to everyone. ICANN, there's plenty of things that cost money. There were the excess of revenues from any income-producing activity goes as a generic point. Nonprofit does not mean non-revenue generating. Yeah, so perhaps there's a little bit of confusion around that point, is that ICANN is a not-for-profit, but it doesn't mean that the new GTLD program cannot provide a profit that will offset expenses or expenditures in other areas of the business. The question is, if we have a floor or a ceiling with set amounts, how much are we okay with in that gap versus not, and what is acceptable and not as well? Also, Trang says, does the concept of floor mean a floor above the cost recovery of processing applications or some arbitrary floor? It's not clear. Lots of other chat. Jeff, the floor means that essentially you're looking at cost recovery, but if cost recovery is not as high as the arbitrary price floor, then the price becomes the floor. So anyone else have any other comments? Or perhaps we can summarize all of the thoughts today in, for the next call, and we can set aside some time to go a little bit more further or in depth on that based on the summary from this one. I don't see any more hands. I see a couple of people typing, but in the interest of time, Sarah, would you like to maybe introduce the next topic, which is the clarity of the application process? Or do you want me to continue?
Sure, I can do that.
Perfect.
And I see that a few more comments have appeared in the chat. Greg has noted maybe we turn every new GTLD application into a potential auction, i.e. applications are public and can offer a higher price, not suggesting that is a good idea, but it is an alternative to the current model. And then Michael noted when those same registries consider applying in subsequent rounds, yes, it is a high concern. Applying for, I mean. Okay. So I'm going to draw a line under this conversation and go to the next slide, which was sort of an overview of our discussion
from ICANN 58 on the clarity of application process. And these are just some of the comments and the input that we received. Some of it is similar to what we have heard before. There were a few questions that were asked, and so we thought it would just be good to highlight those points and give people the opportunity to comment further, agree, disagree. So the first one being, has there been any discussion of how to capture information after the last round to help use it as a guidance for the next round? Also, did anything come out of clarifying questions? Second point, our PDP mandate is not to rewrite the application guidebook, but make suggestions. Accordingly, recommend efficient collection and a better knowledge base and have it in one place. Focus on the practical in the application guidebook, meaning the how, not the why. And I remember on that point, it was sort of more of a, you know, an applicant, was it the dummy's guide to the application process, sort of a, you know, a better explanation of how to make it through the whole application process. Again, this has come up multiple times, make the process as predictable and clear as possible. For areas of the application guidebook where there is an expectation of future engagement by third parties, such as community priority evaluation, it is perhaps imperative to have those third parties in place ahead of time, and include any necessary guidelines that will be used in their process and not generated after applications have been received. And then finally, question raised, if the application guidebook were to go as it is today, does ICANN foresee changes or impact on clarifying questions to be the same as the previous round, or is it still unpredictable? So that was just some of the feedback that we had during ICANN 58. Like I said, some of this we had discussed before, but I thought it was good to just sort of bring it to the forefront again, recap what was discussed, and see if one has any additional input. It seems that we have some definite suggestions about making it clearer, have it be more of an explanation of how to do the application process, and provide a database where people can easily search and find information. I think those are the main points. Does anyone have, Trang, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. This is Trang. I was just wondering if you wanted me to respond to some of the questions that are raised on the slide here, particularly the last one.
Yes, please. That would be great.
So, from my perspective, I think the last question with regards to if the AGB was to go as it is today with no changes, does ICANN foresee changes or impact to clarifying questions to be the same as the previous round? Obviously, the questions won't change, right? But I think that the applicants will become smarter. I mean, we certainly have more information that are out there. So, I think just the applicants being smarter about it, and also consultants that are maybe helping applicants understanding sort of the nature of the questions better. I think that in and of itself would reduce the number of clarifying questions that we would see in the next round. The other thing that I think will help reduce the number of clarifying questions is I think we can be smarter in designing the questions form. I know that a lot of the clarifying questions that were issued last time was because the way that the question was posed, obviously the question is the questions are in the applicant guidebook, but the way that they were written on the screen, if you would, in the system was sort of it was just the entire question, and then maybe five different things that the one question is asking. And that what we saw last time was that applicants sometimes only attached three things or provided answers to three of the parts of the entire question. So the next round, in designing the form, I think we can be smarter to force applicants to provide the correct information that we are seeking for each of the questions so that we can reduce the number of clarifying questions asking for missing information and that sort of thing. So I think that Yes, I think even if the AGB doesn't change, I think the number of clarifying questions would reduce in the next round just because there's things that we can do, I can or can do, and I think applicants and consultants are smarter next time around. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Karen. That was very helpful. This is Sarah Bakke speaking again. Sorry, I'm horrible about saying that. I also note that there is a comment from Donna in the chat saying at Trang, I think if we went forward with the current application, ICANN also could provide some kind of how-to guide based on experience from 2012. And Trang agreed with Donna. So, Trang, is that an old hand or is that new? Old hand. Okay, great. I'm just seeing if there's any more chat or discussion here. I'm not seeing any more hands. There's a few people typing. Okay, I'll go to the next slide. Phil has noted, surely the goal for round two should be to minimize clarifying questions as much as possible. A huge number worry the Q50 question to which a solution will be found in round two. And that was from Phil. Okay, our next slide. Let's see, get this in here. Is the RSP program. Chris, I don't know if you wanted to speak to this or if you want to just sort of share that responsibility.
We can share, but feel free to go ahead because my voice is starting to go.
Okay. Let's see if that's better for everyone. I noted a few of the questions that, well, this is from our discussion again. This is Sarah Bakke for the record from our discussion at ICANN 58. And when we started discussing this, we noted that some of the problems that we were looking to solve was changing from one service provider to another and repetitive testing of service providers. Some interesting questions that were raised was, is repeat testing an interpretation of the rule a form of application rather than the fault of the rules themselves? And then the same could be said for transfers, that it's not a fault of the rules, but rather an application of the rules. I thought those were interesting questions and good points to raise here. We've talked about this multiple times in the pros and cons here. There's definitely a big concern about a race to the bottom. Such an approval process would set up a minimum criteria that registry service providers would need to meet, and that's all they would meet and not exceed and not innovate. There's some current issues, I guess, that are being dealt with regarding SLAs. Current operators are sailing very close, or there's some current operators who are sailing close to those SLAs, actually meeting the SLAs technically, but there are concerns on how they're operating. So setting a minimum standard that creates capability of meeting that minimum standard, but not necessarily satisfying or having a satisfactory performance. Would making SLAs more stringent solve this? Insight on statistics on how many have come close to within a percentage of failure, and I think Steve Chang had noted during the meeting in Copenhagen that there had been 27 times where an SLA had been exceeded but did not trigger EBRO. And I see a comment from Jeff that this subject will be a primary topic for next WorkTrack 1 call in 2 weeks. Yes, we will definitely be getting into more conversations on the RSC program. So before I go to the next slide, does anyone have any comments regarding some of these points that were raised during our last meeting in Copenhagen. Not seeing any hands, so I will continue. Okay, so some other points that were raised was the anti-competitive obstacles. Implementing this kind of a program reduces obstacles for new backend provider entrants. Thus, there is an anti-competitive type of risk by having a high level of constraints that is not necessary. It was also noted that this could potentially commoditize backend providers, making every registry and service provider look like every other registry service provider. There was also concerns noted that this could homogenize the services that the backend providers are able to provide. Again, it wouldn't support or reward innovation, but it was noted that a base registry agreement that applies to all of the registry operators that sets the core standard should leave plenty of room for innovation and competition. Again, the issue of portability was raised, and I think it was Jonathan Robinson that noted that there are some operational issues and concerns regarding future rounds, and that the registries are currently having some discussions regarding those issues with the GDD staff. And then there was an overarching concern, and something that we need to keep in mind is that not all registries are equal. One could be operating a private brand registry where the concern is that of the brand owner, and the implications are different to that of a multi-million dollar TLD registry that serves many different customers and requirements. And so the requirements could be quite different. So that sort of recaps the discussions that we had when we were in Copenhagen. I don't know if we have any further comments or questions or concerns. Like we've said, we will be getting more into the RSG program during our next discussion, and we will also be looking at the, I don't know if y'all remember, it was months ago that Donna Austin had proposed, I made a proposal for this program, and we will be looking at that much closer, and it'll help drive our discussion as well. So hopefully everyone can attend the call in 2 weeks. And I'm not seeing any further hands. Krista, do you have anything that you'd like to add here?
Sorry, losing my voice because I have a cold, but I think perhaps one of the things where it would be great to get some feedback or maybe even some hands on whether everyone thinks that the interpretation of the rules on repeat testing is an application rather than a rule issue. Perhaps anyone would like to add something to that, or any insights or anything else like that, I think would be really probably helpful. Or not. I don't really have anything else to add. I just think that insight could be really helpful in answering some of the questions and useful going forward. I don't really have anything else to add on the RSP program.
Okay. I see Donna is typing, so we'll give her a moment.
Sarah, it's Krista once again. I see Donna said, I think it's an implementation issue. Thanks, Donna. If anyone else has an opinion on that, please. Jeff, I see your hand.
Yeah, I think, this is Jeff Newman. I'm not sure it's necessarily, I think it's a little bit of both an implementation and a policy issue. I think that we could set a policy if we wanted to have an RSP program, we could surely set by policy that the testing only done once unless there's some new application proposed in a future proposal. But, you know, I'm not sure what difference that necessarily makes in terms of whether we have an RSV program or not. I'm not sure why this is an issue.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jeff. So it looks like we're 6 minutes away from the top of the hour. I know some of us have a call coming up. So if we have no further hands or chat, we'd like to thank you for your time and your input. And the next meeting, as you said, will be on April 11th at 20 UTC, and we will be having a further discussion on the RSV program and looking at potential policy issues that that could raise. So hopefully everyone can join us for that call. And with that, if no one has any other business or comments that they would like, we can end the call and you can get 6 minutes of your day back.
Sorry, can I just add one comment, Sarah?
Of course.
It's just for the record. If anyone has any other ideas or suggestions or thoughts on the floor and any insights on the pros and cons of that and would like to email us or, share those ideas for the next call, it would be greatly appreciated. So feel free to ping us, and we'll make sure that a summary of that is on the next call. If anyone else has anything else, if not, I think we'll wrap it up. Okay.
Great. I think you got this.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.